Great. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for inviting us to come and talk tonight. It's a real pleasure to be here. Conversations about AI are everywhere in the news. And I think Alzheimer's, and particularly dementia, is one of the biggest health challenges that we're going to have in our generation. And so it's no surprise that things like AI and machine learning are being thrown at all of the Alzheimer's research in as much kind of volume as everybody can possibly muster at the moment. In terms of numbers, we're quoting the statistic, 1 in 2 people will have their lives devastated by dementia unless we change the ending at the moment. That's about 1 in 3 people will go on to develop dementia. And Alzheimer's accounts for about 2/3 of those numbers as we move forward. During the next decade, we really need to revolutionize the way we treat, diagnose, and prevent dementia. Treatment, I mean, you'll all heard in the news, great news this year in terms of lecanemab and donanemab, first generation treatments, drugs that are intended to strip amyloid out of the brains of patients. And they're showing positive, albeit quite modest, results slowing down cognitive decline. First generation, light at the end of the tunnel, and it's a really, really exciting time to be in dementia research. Still a lot to do. The one thing they're all pointing to is the importance of getting in there early, of early detection and early diagnosis. If you can't detect the disease, you can't treat the disease. So that's the first challenge we've got. So early detection is an absolute key to actually unlocking all of the power of the future treatments that you hear about on the news. If we talk about where we are in terms of what do we mean by early detection and diagnosis. So I have to confess, when I joined AI UK, I got quite a lot of grief for getting the two mixed up. So dementia, you all know this, is a set of symptoms. And dementia is caused by diseases. Alzheimer's is the most common one of those diseases. We talk about detection as the ability to detect the presence of that disease, the first changes that are happening in the brain. Diagnosis is when a clinician takes all of those facts and makes a clinical judgment on an individual as we move forward. So at the moment, someone glibly put it to me, most dementias are diagnosed by accident, literally when there is an accident or a catastrophic trigger event. And then we go out and we ask the question, we say, what's causing it? We have got to change that radically over the next few years. We have got to start diagnosing the diseases that cause dementia before the dementia symptoms start. And that's the only way the treatments are going to help do it. Now, we don't need AI to diagnose dementia, but we do need AI and machine learning to help us detect the diseases that cause dementia. And when we look at this, I mean, David talked about this in a slightly different way in cancer. There are two really, what I'd say, real competing technologies at the moment pushing forward into early detection, one of which is pathology. So amyloid and tau in the brain cause tangles, which cause the dementias, which move forward. The latest drugs that you're hearing about are all about stripping the amyloid out of the brain. Blood tests are coming through. At the moment, we're looking at PET scans and quite intrusive lumbar punctures to detect the presence of amyloid in the bloods and in the brains. Blood's coming through. Cognitive function is the other area that's a sort of, I wouldn't quite call it a competing technology because they're complementary, they tell us different things. Cognitive function tells you when the brain is starting to change the way it works. And that's measuring things like working memory, episodic memory, executive function, and all of those kind of areas. Speech, language are coming through quickly. And then you layer on top of that the genetic risks that are coming through. Just a bit of a journey, really, in terms of where we are actually in the clinic and what's actually happening in the clinics around the world as we go forward. I have randomly chosen a couple of examples from some of our landscape studies that have come through. Paper to digital to AI, that's the journey that we're on. The figure you see there is a clock test. It's a well-established test for dementia. Can you draw a circle? Can you put the numbers on it? Can you put the time in it that does it? What particularly companies like Linus Health are doing is they start on the journey. First of all, you start with, okay, remove the paper. Let's have a keyboard entry. Let's have a tablet entry. Then you move on to, can we get the AI and the machine learning to reproduce what a decent clinician can do? Can it look at that and say the numbers are in the wrong order and save the clinician's time? That's great. And I think as David put it so eloquently, what we all want to do is to move on to the next step, to spot the patterns in those kind of tests that the clinicians can't yet spot, that are too subtle. The other thing that AI is really starting to enable is voice and language models, the ability to strip large amounts of data, extract features and put them in. So things like the Alzheimer's Disease Discovery Foundation, their speech consortium, quote from people like Winterlight Labs and Cambridge Cognition, monitoring cognitive impairment through speech, speech and language change. And a lot of these tests at the moment, they're still in R&D, they're still in clinical trials, but they'll be looking to move into kind of clinical usage soon. I'm an engineer. It all starts with, can we measure the right kind of data and can we get the right kind of clinically meaningful data? I have no confidence in the ability of AI just to monitor what I'm doing on a day-to-day basis and then phone me up on the day and tell me that I've got dementia. It's all about clinically meaningful data. And this from our EDEN project, the early detection of neurodegenerative diseases, this is our list. And it starts with a really strong cognitive test right in the middle of it that's measuring all of the different aspects of memory. And then we start looking at it and we say, actually, if we put things like gait, sleep, social activity, mood, eye movement, EEG, and layer those on the top, can we make those cognitive tests more sensitive and more specific? I think if any of you have relatives, friends with dementia, with Alzheimer's, you'll know that all of these measures change in people as they go through. And they change quite progressively and quite slowly. With hindsight and with retrospect, most people can look back at some of these measures and say, I could see that changing in my father, my mother, my auntie, whatever it is. And really the challenge we set ourselves is how early can we detect those subtle signs? So really, I mean, the questions are sort of, we're looking at it, specificity. Sensitivity, can we get better than the clinicians as we move forward on those ones? I think I just wanted to share, this is kind of a couple of slides that I shared with our board, courtesy of Zoe Curtsey and at Cambridge University. I know we've got a couple of the MPL scientists as well who are working on the same work in the audience here. Looking at AI models, what we're looking at when we build the AI models, we start with, think of those time steps as somebody going into a clinic and having a series of tests, scans, blood tests, memory tests. We'll then compare that with what the digital tests are telling us at the same time and build those and look for the clusters. The ultimate goal is to get away with the highly intrusive scans and testing and just rely on the digital markers, identify where people have got a problem, and then push them back into the system. Now, I think as we start looking at this is the kind of the ideal for us. What we really want to be able to do is to look at an individual, carry out a series of tests, complement it with some of the sort of lifestyle tracking and those kind of issues, and really try and plot their trajectory of cognitive decline. And across here, we've got MMSE, which is a measure of cognitive decline. And this is where Zoe and the team have really managed to sort of cluster things out and look for it. So up at the top, score of 30 is the maximum you can score on MSE for cognitive function. Up at the top, nice, normal, healthy aging. And then we get a few other factors coming in. Down at the bottom, you can see a trajectory, which is for an individual dropping down, showing significant cognitive decline. Typically around 24 is regarded as kind of cognitively normal. Now, so you can all of a sudden, I mean, you're all looking at this going, God, those data boundaries are huge, and they are. The real challenge we've got with all of this is the population diversity that we have to deal with. How can we really look at models which are going to separate out the really complex entanglement of geriatric depression and cognitive decline, that are going to look at people's their early years education, all of those kind of things, and separate them out? It's a huge task that we've all got ahead of us. Early days, and even if we could do this, I mean, we look at this stuff, even if we could actually say to an individual and look at a couple of tests, 6 months at a time, you're on this trajectory, we want to do it, we're not going to act without understanding the pathology again. You look at lecanemab as a drug, the side effects are not insignificant. It's very expensive. You're not going to hand that out to somebody on the premise of just a digital test. You're going to want to know there's a buildup in amyloid. You want to know that the target's there in the pathology to strip it out. The biggest challenge, I mean, for me, as ever, it's all about data. It's all about practicalities. I tried to draw up a simplified technology stack to explain some of the challenges that we have moving forward. This is about as simple as I could get it. So if we kind of talk through, you start with, what do you want to measure? Who do you want to measure that in? Who are the at-risk groups? Which for something like Alzheimer's, we know that's quite a tight kind of age range coming through. You start with how are you then going to measure those data and extract them? We're working with Mesurio. It's an active test app. I glibly put it, pictures of chickens. Have you seen this chicken before? Swipe left, swipe right. Do we ask you to swipe up? We're also working with a passive test app, which is longevity by applied cognition. And that's looking at sort of how you use the machine. Do you dwell on tasks too long? Do you look at websites too long? Do you have to go back and reread things? And it's monitoring all of that passively in the background, and supplement that with things like activity trackers, which are tracking disturbed sleep and all of those kind of issues. And then we need a secure data platform to put it, to strip it out, to do all the harmonization, the pseudonymization. That's all happening at the Alan Turing Institute. And all of that you've got to go through before you even hand it over to a machine learning expert and ask them to try and extract all the clinical meaningful data. It's quite a challenge. And then probably even harder at the back end, which we've not even started to think about, how do you then cascade that out to your clinical audience in an explainable way? And data is the challenge. Data is a real challenge as we move forward here. How much data do you need to really build unbiased AI models? Quite a lot of the companies, particularly startups, are working with small data sets. And we all know that small data sets risk inducing bias. And we can't afford to do that in dementia. So Black and ethnic minorities, women, are significantly more at risk of dementia than the general population, and are yet really underrepresented in research. So we can't afford to make the biases any worse. And that's why initiatives like the ADDI data sharing, global data sharing platforms are really so important, to actually be able to scale up the amount of data so we can properly train these things. And we've got to get this right. I think one of David's questions was, I've broken it. One of David's questions was, do people really want to know? Our studies in Alzheimer's and dementia say yes, people really do want to know. 74% of the population say they want an early diagnosis. 38% would say they would like to know 15 years beforehand, so they can plan for things, so they can get things ready. And I think, so that's why it's so important that we do get this right. Because if we don't have appropriate regulation, if we don't have appropriately trained models, they will go looking for answers in wellness apps, and they will clog up all of the clinics. We'll have clinics full of the worried well. So we've got to get this right. We want to revolutionize the way we treat Alzheimer's. Okay. Early detection is the key to that revolution moving forward. AI, machine learning are the key to unlocking the power of early detection. And large amounts of well-characterized patient data are absolutely essential to build AI models that are unbiased and population representative. That's where we need to start. Thank you.